This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Health and Healing. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by Africa News Panorama. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis continued his catechesis on St. Paul's letter to the Galatians at the general audience on Wednesday in the Paul VI Hall, emphasizing this week that Christian freedom is expressed in serving others. Christopher Wells reports.
Recalling that through Christ we have passed from the slavery of fear and sin to the freedom of God's children, Pope Francis continued his catechesis on St. Paul's letter to the Galatians by offering a deeper understanding of what is at the heart of Christian liberty. Freedom, he said, is very different from license, is not found in giving in to our own selfish desires, but instead leads us to serve others.
La vera libertà si esprime pienamente nella carità.
True freedom, the Pope said, is fully expressed in love. This, however, leads us to the paradox of the gospel. We are freed by serving. We find ourselves fully to the extent that we give ourselves. We possess life if we lose it. The explanation of this paradox, said Pope Francis, as given by St. Paul, is as simple as it is demanding. It can be explained only by love. In contrast to the modern notion that my freedom ends where yours begins, St. Paul sets Christian freedom, the freedom given by Jesus, that does not involve separating oneself from others, but instead means being part of a community.
La dimensione sociale è fondamentale per I cristiani.
The social dimension is fundamental for Christians, Pope Francis insisted, adding that it enables us to look to the common good and not to private interest. This understanding of liberty is especially important in our day, he said, when the pandemic has taught us how much we need one another. But it's not enough to know this, Pope Francis said. We need to choose it concretely every day. The Pope concluded his catechesis with the exhortation, "Let us say and believe that others are not an obstacle to my freedom, but rather the possibility to fully realize it, because our freedom is born from God's love and grows in charity." I'm Christopher Wells.
Pope Francis later tweeted saying that true freedom, freedom in Christ, does not seek personal interests, but is guided by love and is expressed in service to others, especially to the poor. Love makes us free, said the Pope. It leads us to choose and to do good. It motivates us to serve, the Pope tweeted, ending with the hashtag General Audience. As we have been reporting over the past few days, Pope Francis on the 10th of October celebrated Holy Mass in St. Peter's Basilica to inaugurate the synodal process that will culminate in the 2023 Synod in Rome on the theme For a Synodal Church, Communion, Participation and Mission. In a homily during the launching of the process in his Archdiocese of Bombay in India on Sunday, Cardinal Oswald Gracious explained what synodality is.
The Holy Father, in his address to the assembled congregation in Rome, spoke of three essential elements in a synod: meeting, listening, and discerning. In a synod, one walks together. That means we meet one another, we listen to one another, and we discern what the Holy Spirit is trying to tell us or wants to tell us. Christ intended the church to be inclusive. We need to walk together, leaving no one behind. We need to listen to each other, especially those on the periphery, especially those in difficulties, especially those who are sick, especially those who are suffering, and even those who have left the church. Listening, the Holy Father reminded us, is much more than just hearing. The synodal process is meant to reform the church by discerning what is it that ails the church. This we will discover by listening. Hence the need, friends, to listen even those who have left the church or those who are thinking of leaving the church. They will have a story to tell which might make us reflect. What ails the church? Clericalism has affected the church. We are a clergy-dominated church. Discrimination against women has affected the church, where women are not given the rightful place in society and the church. Lack of protection of minors has affected the church. We must put into practice safeguarding processes in our parishes, schools and institutions. Oppressions of Dalits has affected the church. Rejection of migrants has affected the church. Xenophobic with our own people. Inadequate concern for climate change has affected the church. Lack of importance given to youth has affected the church. Our vocation, yours and mine, we are called to build the kingdom of God. And all I mentioned so far are counter-kingdom values. Pope Francis calls us, invites us to make a beginning, to become a listening church, a serving church, a humble church, a church where all belong to in communion, a church in which all participate according to their capacity, a church where all go in mission, different according to our own formation, environment, according to our calling.
That was Cardinal Oswald Gracious of the Archdiocese of Bombay in India. The Apostolic Nuncio to Kenya and South Sudan, Archbishop Hubertus Mateus Maria van Mengen, has called on religious in Kenya to reflect on the gift of their consecrated lives by looking up to St. Joseph as a perfect example to emulate. The Nuncio was addressing participants in a meeting of the Kenya Religious Superiors Conference held recently at the Passionist Retreat Center in Karen, Nairobi. Religious life is this vision, said the Archbishop. It means seeing what really matters in life. It means welcoming the Lord's gift with open arms. The consecrated person, he continued, is one who every day looks at himself or herself and says, everything is a gift, all is grace. The Archbishop urged religious to imitate Jesus and turn their gaze into the world, a gaze of compassion, a gaze that goes in search of those at the peripheries, a gaze that does not condemn but encourages, frees and consoles, said Archbishop Van Mengen. For more on this story and others, visit our web portal, vaticannews.va. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
I'm Father Paul Samasumo. The Office of the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the UN is concerned about the developments in the Kingdom of Eswatini. Eswatini is undergoing a period of political and economic crisis as citizens agitate for reforms and freedoms. The United Nations say the UN Secretary General is following with concern the developments in Eswatini, including the recent deployment of armed security forces at various schools. There have also been reports of excessive use of force in response to student demonstrations, as well as the indefinite closure of schools. The UN chief says these actions adversely affect children and young people. The Secretary General has reiterated the importance of enabling the people of Eswatini to exercise their civic and political rights peacefully. Guterres further urged the government of Eswatini to ensure that security forces act in conformity with relevant international human rights standards, including the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. The Secretary General has condemned all acts of violence and is encouraging all political parties and the media to refrain from disinformation, hate speech, and incitement. The Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, is one of Africa's smallest countries with a population of less than 2 million. It is a monarchy led by King Mswati. About 100 women on Tuesday became the first female judges to join Egypt's State Council, one of the country's main judicial bodies. The 98 women were sworn in before the council chief judge, Mohamed Hossam El-Din, in Cairo. The swearing-in comes in just months after President Abdel El-Sisi asked for women to join the State Council and the public prosecution offices. The two judicial bodies have until recently employed only men. Hossam El-Din welcomed the new judges, saying that they were an important addition to the State Council. Turkish President Recep Erdogan arrived on Tuesday in Nigeria's capital Abuja for the last leg of his mini tour of three African countries, which also included Angola and Togo. Earlier, Erdogan on Tuesday held a four-way meeting with President Faure Gnassingbé of Togo, President Rochmark Christian Kabore of Burkina Faso, and President George Weah of Liberia. At the end of his visit to Angola, Erdogan called on African countries to unite, act together, and resist the exploitation of Western countries. He said, "A fair world is possible." Mali's government has asked the country's Islamic High Council to begin a dialogue with Al-Qaeda-linked groups in a new effort to address a nearly decade-long insecurity crisis. It is not clear when the dialogue will begin, but the council will lead discussions with the leaders of Mali-based jihadist groups. Mali's Minister of Religious Affairs and Worship, Mamadou Kone, confirmed that the government asked the council to lead discussions with the two jihadist groups. Mali has been fighting growing insecurity since 2012, when Al-Qaeda-linked groups took over parts of the north. Despite a French-led military operation that forced many rebels from the northern strongholds in 2013, insurgents have quickly regrouped and have been advancing towards Bamako, the capital. The jihadist groups want compulsory veiling of women, freedom to collect taxes, and traditional justice based on Sharia law. You're tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Health and Healing. Virologists and epidemiologists are still puzzled by the Delta variant, which is currently responsible for over 80% of COVID-19 cases and death in many countries around the world. The original virus, which was identified in China in 2019, did not have adverse effects on children and youth. But reports coming from various countries say many children have ended up in intensive care units after getting infected with the Delta variant, and some have died. Dr. Eric Faijil Ding is an epidemiologist. He explains.
Delta is out of control worldwide. But the lesson is that even for highly vaccinated countries, relying on vaccines alone is not a panacea to stop Delta. Delta is twice as contagious. And what that means is that just relying on the single vaccine approach is very, very narrow-minded. We must do other layers in addition to waiting around for vaccines. We have seen the Delta variant surge in places even with 50% vaccinations, even with 60% vaccinations. And Iceland has over 75% fully vaccinated. And guess what? Iceland is still seeing a surge with the Delta variant. The Delta variant is so contagious that you have to layer on other things. So reopening without any other measures in place with 50% vaccinated is a very dangerous gamble. What we should do, instead of choosing between lockdowns or reopening, is there's good in between with premium masks for all citizens in all places, avoiding indoor dining, which is always risky, and improving ventilation and air disinfection. Masks are not a waste of time. They are a partial protection. Masks only work when everyone wears it, because masks are best for catching your aerosols and droplets, but it's not good for inhaling as a filter.
Although scientists are working day and night to discover better ways to bring the COVID-19 pandemic under control, at the moment, the fight must take place on several fronts.
We need prevention methods in addition to vaccinations. The vaccines are good hospitalization prevention measures, but in terms of leakiness, they are very leaky for transmission. No one wants lockdowns, but without these other measures, you cannot just simply hope that if you reopen, but you don't have ventilation, if you don't have these in place, you will be headed towards a lockdown because the cases will be surging so quickly and the hospital beds will be filling up. Without these other measures, you're headed for disaster. The old virus, the vaccines are having 99% efficacy against hospitalization. With the Delta variant, it's dropped to 93% and 88% in protection against hospitalization. Those numbers are real. It's partly a function of the Delta variant being so evasive. In addition, waning immunity is also a problem after 180 days, 6 months. Breakthrough rates just naturally go up after 6 months. And this is why all these countries are talking about boosters. With such a great penetrating virus, the 90% efficacy of protection against hospitalization is good, but it is not foolproof.
According to Dr. Faijil Ding, life will never be the same again after the virus has been brought under control. However, we must move on. Daily activities must go on, and especially schools must reopen, but under the strict observance of the preventive measures, even in countries where a larger part of the population has been vaccinated.
We have to make sure that children are vaccinated. Vaccines for 5 to 11-year-olds will hopefully be approved soon. And then later on this fall, vaccines for 2 to 4-year-olds will also be coming online. And then finally, by early next year, vaccines for 6-month-old to 2-year-olds will be available as well. In addition to that, teachers must be mandated to be vaccinated as well. The tide has changed. I think vaccine mandates are here. Vaccine entry passports are here. Young people are extremely, extremely susceptible. But whether we'll have a perfect sterilizing immunity, I'm not sure if that is possible. Not all vaccines work like that. The Delta variant is 1,000 times greater viral load than the old strain. We have to get used to a new normal. But the new normal is not live with the virus. And that new normal may involve wearing masks for quite a while until the virus dies down, until vaccines are available to everyone. The Delta variant does not care about your politics. The Delta variant cares about infecting as many people as it can. And if you give it an open lane to do that without these other mitigations, it will take advantage.
That was Dr. Eric Faijil Ding, an epidemiologist. And lastly, Dr. Maria Van Kerkhove, the head of the World Health Organization's Department for Fighting COVID-19, answers some of your questions. The first one is, what is the situation of COVID-19 infections and death in the world in the last 7 days?
In the last week alone, we had more than 4.4 million cases reported to WHO, and more than 66,000 people died. This puts us well over 207 million cases reported to date, and more than 4.3 million people who've died. It's been a consecutive 8 weeks where we've seen increasing case numbers, and it's been about 3 weeks or 4 weeks where we've seen increasing numbers of death. In the last week, we didn't really see a change, but 66,000 people died last week alone to COVID-19. When we look at the regional level, where the situation is very different, it's very different at national levels and subnational levels. Overall, globally, there was a 2% increase in cases, and the deaths remained around the same. But we're seeing large numbers of cases, 4.4 million cases in 1 week. 1.5 million alone were in the Americas, and that's an 8% increase in the last 7 days. In Europe, there was a slight increase of 1%. In the Western Pacific region, a 14% increase in cases. And there were decreases in cases in Southeast Asia and in Africa. And in the Eastern Mediterranean region, it was almost the same number as last week. So there's quite a dynamic situation at the regional level. In terms of deaths, We're still seeing increases in a number of regions in the Americas, in the Eastern Mediterranean region, in the Western Pacific, with declines in deaths in Europe, in Southeast Asia, and in Africa. But it's safe to say that we really shouldn't be in this position 19 months into a global pandemic when we have tools. I think this is what we find quite challenging, given that we don't have the tools evenly distributed around the world, and even those that are available, hand hygiene and mask wearing and physical distancing, they're not really being used consistently across the world. So that's putting a lot of people at risk. And of course, you know, the vaccine distribution is really quite uneven. So there's a lot of challenges we face right now.
The second question is about the uneven distribution of COVID-19 vaccines. Africa is the region with the least access to the vaccines. How is this affecting the continent?
The vaccines that are available prevent severe disease, they prevent people from being hospitalized, and they prevent people from dying, and they are incredibly effective. And there are many that are available around the world. However, the distribution of these vaccines are only in a handful of countries. The majority of the world has not had access to these vaccines. And if you don't have access to the vaccines, especially people who have underlying conditions, they are at a higher risk of hospitalization and they're at a higher risk of dying. So anywhere where we don't have vaccines being used, people who are more exposed, so health workers, for example, and people who have these underlying medical conditions, like underlying heart disease or respiratory disease, they will be at an increased risk of dying. So it will have an impact on mortality. And this is such a shame, because to have these tools developed over years of collaboration, to have this acceleration of several safe and effective vaccines being available, to not be used to keep people alive, is really not just epidemiologically not sound, but it's morally reprehensible. And I think, you know, COVAX, WHO, and our partners are working really hard to change that, but it's not happening fast enough. So I think that's what we remain focused on, is vaccine equity, because this will save lives.
The third question is, what can each of us do to stay safe and to minimize the risk of being infected with COVID-19?
We follow the science, and this is my job. This is what I do. I work with people around the world, and we look at the science. We try to block out the noise, focus on what we need to do, and we know that you can keep yourself safe. First thing is to prevent infections. If you can keep yourself safe from getting infected, and you can do this a number of ways, it's individual level measures. Physical distancing, you know, keep your distance from others, at least 1 meter, the further the better. Spend more time outdoors than indoors, because we know indoors is riskier and there's a greater possibility, especially if you have poor ventilation. In closed rooms with poor ventilation, the virus can spread more easily through aerosols, through droplets, especially if you spend longer periods of time. Wearing a mask. And make sure when you wear a mask, you have clean hands. So when you put your mask on, make sure that you have a good fit. The fit is really important for a mask. Cover your nose and cover your mouth. Make sure you don't have a lot of pockets. So make sure it fits your face and that you keep wearing it over your nose and your mouth. And if you touch your mask, make sure you have clean hands. Avoid crowded spaces. Avoid crowds as much as you can. And I know we all want to sort of get back to being social. Avoid those crowds for now. You want to minimize your contact with other people. When it's your turn, please get vaccinated and receive the full course of that vaccination. So there's a lot that we can do. Follow your local guidance. Follow what is being said, because the transmission dynamics are very different. And I know it's confusing where we say do this and then maybe change it slightly, but it is a dynamic situation and we want to really give people options. If you can work from home, work from home. If you are feeling unwell, stay home, contact your medical provider, get tested.
The fourth question is about the variants of the coronavirus which causes COVID-19. A variant is a strain of the original virus which has acquired new characteristics. The listener wants to know what triggers the changes in the original virus leading to the emergence of a variant.
It's natural that the virus changes over time as it passes between people. There are changes that happen. There are a couple of different ways where the virus could perhaps change. One is when you have a lot of transmission. If you have a lot of transmission in an area and the virus is passing between people, there's more possibility for variants to emerge. The second area that we're looking at is if the virus enters animal population. Last year, we had this cluster 5 variant related to mink populations, and mink are very susceptible to SARS-CoV-2, and it can spread very easily between mink. And we always look when it passes between humans and animals to humans, you could have an increased risk of these mutations or these variants emerging. We also look at long infection in people. And if they are infectious for long periods of time, immunocompromised individuals, for example, you could have variants. So we really need to drive transmission down. We need to do everything that we can to minimize transmission between people, because that will minimize the risk of variants emerging. And vaccines play a role in that too. Even though they're focused on preventing severe disease and death, we are seeing some positive effects in terms of reduction in infection and also transmission. Even though that's not what they're primarily being used for, we are seeing some positive results there too.
That was Dr. Maria Van Kerkhove, the head of the World Health Organization's department that is leading and coordinating the fight against COVID-19. And that was Health and Healing for this week.
And that program was first aired by John Baptist Tumusiime on the 18th of August. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature Culture and Society and News for Young People. I am Festus Tarawali, and do join us then. Praise be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.
What my family cannot do, oh no.